for our city. This is the FC Buffalo Show on 91.3 FM, WBNY. Now, from the WBNY studio, here are your hosts, Ben Tsujimoto and Nick Mandola.
Well, here we go. Derek doesn't understand dramatic pauses, producer Derek.
I was waiting for you to talk, too. It was a tense moment.
It was tense because it deserves to be tense. The miracle is complete, Ben Tsujimoto.
Oh, boy.
Hater of fun, HOF. Ben Tsujimoto got his HOF degree because Ben doesn't care at all.
Master's in HOF or NOF.
No, he does care. He's just a little sick of talking about it. But now it's real. So maybe now is an okay time to talk about it. Leicester City, this is essentially the post-match show. Leicester City, champions of the English Premier League. First place after Tottenham Hotspur blow a two-goal halftime lead at Chelsea, a place they had not won. This is one of the cool things about only playing teams twice a year, home and away, if you stay in the same league. A place they have not won now in 27 years, a local derby. That's a pretty cool way to end this story, to be honest with you. If it's not going to be Leicester winning the darn thing at home, it's kind of neat that a London derby finishes that way with Chelsea coming back. Should have been several red cards against Spurs. It was one of the nastiest second halves I've seen in a long time. Cahill and Hazard score to cancel out Harry Kane and Son's goals. The final score, 2-2. The yellow cards, 9 for Spurs, which means 9 separate players, and I don't think Lloris got one. So all but one field player.
The Kyle Walker one sticks out to me. That was a pretty violent tackle.
Oh, there was a lot, and that was early. Mm-hmm. That was early. Of course, one's traded in stoppage time. 3 in the final 2 minutes of the game. Mm. Harry Kane with a reckless slide tackle. Moussa Dembele then kicks a ball into, I forget who the player was, might have been Hazard. And then Ryan Mason gets one for an equally vile sliding tackle. I was sitting here in the student union here at Buffalo State College. By the way, I'm Nick Mandola. He's Ben Tsujimoto. What a game. What a great way to put a capstone on it. And, you know, you walk into the studio, not that the sports fans here and the football hosts before us, or the American football hosts, don't appreciate soccer in its own right, but everyone on their minds, everybody knows this story, Leicester City.
People keep popping their heads into our little studio room here and saying, Leicester, Leicester,
they
Leicester.
They did it. They did it. 132 years as a club, have never won England's top flight. Well, never say never, as Justin Bieber would say.
And I kind of feel bad for Spurs fans in this, and maybe you won't agree with me. But the reason I feel bad is they could have made this a much better race than they did.
All they did was win last week against West Brom.
Yeah, West Brom was a game they definitely should have won today. I mean, you shouldn't blow. I mean, Chelsea's record when trailing by 2 goals at halftime was like 0-30-1 or something like
that. Wow.
So, and that's obscene. And the fact that Eden Hazard is the one who scores the tying goal. And
this
was
maybe his second goal of the
second
year.
Second goal of the year.
The
and
Premier League,
he was the whipping boy for Chelsea for much of the beginning. So it's almost sort of, you know, I don't know if it's redemption exactly, because Chelsea's still sitting there in, I guess, 10th, right? 10th or 11th. So it's still got to feel good for Chelsea to, you know, put together a decent second half of the year, push towards, I mean, you know, at least the top half of the table. But, man, Tottenham, they blew an opportunity.
They really did. And the verb that a lot of people use when they want to make fun of Tottenham is to say that they Spursed it up.
It was Spursy.
That was not the same Spurs performance we've seen. They seem rattled. Yeah. And that has not been a hallmark of the club this year.
The ball watching on Cahill's goal, right off the corner kick. You can see, like, I know this is happening very quickly.
Sure.
So, I mean, when it's in slow motion, they're playing it back, and you see Youngmin Son kind of just staring at Gary Cahill, like, is he going to trap it? And then is he going to shoot it?
Right.
And just, like, looking fascinated at it. And Christian Eriksen doing the exact same thing. And Eric Dier is, like, hugging someone.
Yeah.
Like, it's just that could have been avoided. And that's the goal that I think turned the game.
Yeah. Well, they say that the 2-0 lead is the most dangerous in sports, which is ridiculous.
I hadn't heard that one before.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Simple math, Ben. Simple math. So, yeah, Leicester City, champions. And I wonder if they won't get some applause in the other room.
I know.
I wonder if they won't I don't think it's in their mentality to let down, so to speak. But it'll be interesting to see how close it ends at the end of the year. Spurs obviously with two games left, one against Newcastle, which they should win, even though the Magpies will be desperate. And I think Southampton, the other one, which is Pochettino's former team. So, you know, will Leicester just be like, yep, mission accomplished? I wonder.
As far as the script goes, I mean, the script could have been written better for this. You know, I mean, it could have been Leicester having to win at home. Well, not having to win, but with the opportunity to win against Everton this coming weekend. And I feel like the drama around that, and then the celebration around that, and the fact that, like, whoa, this achievement is wild. And there's still going to be a little of that this weekend.
Oh, but it's going to be
bonkers. But not in, like, if when you think about, like, the 94th minute in a 2-1 Leicester win over Everton this coming week. You know, I mean,
you have to think there will be a guard of honor before the game, which is cool. So to think about it, the game is at Leicester, correct?
Yeah.
To think about the game at King Power Stadium, a Leicester team that in their final home match last season, you know, was celebrating getting out of the drop zone.
Yeah.
And now their players should, in theory, be walking through a guard of honor from Everton is stunning.
And a man dear to your heart, though, won't be able to do it.
Oh, who?
Mr. Drinkwater.
Oh, Daniel. Yeah, Danny Drinkwater with a bit of a mistake there in the old red card. Is Vardy out too?
No, Vardy's back.
Vardy's back, right? Yeah, it's been two games now.
The extra game against United.
Yeah. It's hard because when a title run is going down to the wire as it has here, you almost lose track of the match weeks because the games aren't played on the same day.
Yeah.
So in a certain way, this game, even though it was inclusive, it was included in the weekend, it feels like its own
It does,
day.
An event, yeah.
It was awesome. I very, very much enjoyed it. Not because I wanted Spurs to win. I wanted Leicester to... I like this. And NBC, who I work for, they want it to go as long as possible as well.
Uh-huh.
They want... You know, last year was not fun. Chelsea wins by
I was sleepwalking
10 or 11 points, and it wasn't exactly a wild coronation ride down at the end, so... We would love that, but there still will be a relegation fight that's going to go down to the wire. We'll talk about that a little bit later. There's a lot of stuff to get to on the show, but we're right in the throes of this passionate championship exclamation point. Even though it's funny in a way, we don't get to see it a lot in other sports because we have the playoffs here, Ben. We don't see two teams play, one win, and a third team's graphic flashes across the bottom of the screen. They've won it all.
Uh-huh.
And Claudio Ranieri, that was maybe the most stunning thing. If you didn't see the game today, Ranieri, and I bet a lot of people don't even know this because it was a decade ago, was the manager at Chelsea.
Yeah.
And fans were singing his name for the final 10 minutes of the game when they felt it was all but done, that Chelsea had denied Spurs, a London rival, the opportunity to still be alive. And it wasn't going to happen. Spurs were going to lose a point somewhere, and probably this was the most – I guess at Southampton would have been reasonable as well. But, I'm sorry, it would have been home to Southampton. So
I thought it was more likely that Leicester would – get a point out of their last two games.
Sure.
Than Tottenham.
Everton has not been very good.
Yeah, and Leicester just has, I mean, they have so much to play for, and a lot of the sides that they're playing against, you know, are mid-table or just, you know, pretty comfortable where they are.
Let me ask you this, and this is taking in a detour that I, one of these American detours. Is there anything missing for you from having the last game of the season being a decisive one? Is there anything American about you that says, I love the fact that the last game I watch in any season with any team because of playoffs is going to be a championship? Or is this just fine with you?
Well, I'm going to put my director of no fun hat on.
You are the DFN. DF.
You know, it's fine with me. I sort of get annoyed by the spectacle of like a Super Bowl or... I mean, at the same time, if it's a game 7 in NBA or the NHL, like that holds some value to me.
Yeah, but with a lead in from a whole series of anticipation.
Yeah, but I mean, just like the Super Bowl or even the Champions League final to some degree, you know, it's just
Well, you're weeks away. You're usually two or three weeks away from the semifinal, even. So it's not like you're building on that drama. And next week they'll go to Milan for the final.
Yeah,
there's an FA, there's the cups before that, and. I'm with you. I have zero problem with this, and we'll never have this shift in American sports.
Nope.
But the President's Trophy in hockey, when the Sabres won it, is Hockey is one of the few sports, and I guess you could say hockey and basketball, where the achievements of the playoffs and the regular season feel about equal. Because in football, look, you've got to win every week against a great team for 3 or 4 weeks to win the Super Bowl, versus you have to be better than 10 other teams to make the playoffs. So maybe that's a wash. Baseball, 162-game season just to make the playoffs. You might make a one-game playoff. Mm-hmm. So in a lot of ways, baseball should celebrate the pennant a lot more than it does.
Mm-hmm.
But hockey and basketball have these long slogs.
Their playoffs are slogs.
I'm more meant that than the regular season. Yeah. Although, and so, you know, the Warriors having the best record will not be as good as winning the title, but it still counts as an achievement. Hockey doesn't do a great job of honoring the President's Trophy the way it should.
Mm-hmm. As a hockey guy, I would imagine that you like the parody of the NHL playoffs as more of a attractive point for you to watch in relation to the obviously more than the regular season, but maybe more than the NBA playoffs, just because you have no idea if a one seed is going to beat an 8 seed. You know, hockey's
well,
such a game.
Yeah, because you get goofy bounces.
Yeah, exactly.
Basketball is not much for goofy bounces.
Well. You ever see a ball get stuck between the rim and the backboard?
I have, but not
it's not really a bounce.
Not
it's
often.
More of a lodge.
It depends. Well, it would be one heck of a dribble from a very tall man. I think that what I miss the most, Ben, is from hockey is the fact that it used to be more exciting. The underdog used to have a harder time, but it's just legislated so poorly, which is one of the fun things about soccer. I can tell you this. MLS playoffs has changed how I thought about playoffs, mm-hmm. because you can play a whole season and be a phenomenal team, and a team sneaks in, and I don't remember the last time all 6 or all 12 MLS playoff spots were decided before the last weekend. So sometimes an 8th place team jumps into 6th and then wins the MLS Cup MLS Cup, not the Major League Soccer Cup. I don't enjoy that. Parody has killed that for me. You know, we do not see teams dominate for 4 or 5 years at a time, with the exception of the LA Galaxy, and they are an exception to the rule.
Nick, you know what bothers me is playoffs that have 2 legs.
Yeah, I don't like it. It doesn't feel fair.
It doesn't, and it takes away some of the suspense.
The urgency.
Exactly. The urgency is a better word, because the whole concept of away goals and aggregate, and it seems like it's a whole lot more strategic than, hey, we need to win this game today.
I'd be up for abolishing the away goal rule.
But it's... But the away goal rule, but you'd still have the 2 legs.
I'd still have the 2 legs.
Okay.
Because then the urgency is always there.
Yeah.
You could lose a game.
Yeah.
Because what stinks is you get a team, man, was it 2 rounds ago? It's going on right now. It's going again tomorrow.
Yeah.
Atleti scores, has a 1-0 lead on Bayern, but you're like, yeah, but it's too bad that goal wasn't on the road.
Yeah.
So,
sounds silly to say.
It does, right. Exactly. Those road goals are so important. And I know it's difficult to score on the road. It's especially at this stage in the tournament, maybe is when I would eliminate it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you go through it in the group stage because it's a fair. Over, you know, 6 games, you scored in Greece, you scored in Russia, you scored in Spain. Maybe that's a good tiebreaker. But now, are you telling me that if this game between Bayern and Atleti ends 1-0, that'll be the difference. It'll be exactly the same. But if it ends in a flipped fashion, it doesn't feel right to me, is what I'm saying. But I do prefer I prefer soccer's. The way they do it, you still get playoffs in the FA Cup.
Yeah,
you know, that's still the same thing. And the upsets are way cooler than put it this way. Let's flip it on its ear here and say, what if there was an 8-team playoff this year in the Premier League? Would you be feeling any anticipation? I mean, this year might be different because Leicester is the 1 seed, right?
Yeah.
But most seasons, considering it to normally be.
What about a 6-team playoff? First 2 teams get a bye. Then you have...
Oh, the old BDSL playoff.
Well, but you have Arsenal, the 3 seed, against West Ham, the 6 seed. Then City and United, the 4 or 5.
I think it's real cool. I think I want to go against my instinct, which was to say that 1 versus 8 would be bad, because imagine towards the end of the season, you get teams that are within... Because there's always a clutter there around mid-table.
Yeah.
And now, this isn't the case right now, but imagine Stoke...
Yeah.
Well, if we win this weekend, we get a chance to knock off Leicester. Yeah. Or so I think that would be cool.
Yeah, and it's more useful for exactly those teams, I think, between, it depends on how many we have making the quote-unquote EPL playoffs, but it's teams like 9 through 15, you know, begin to have more relevance when, like, once you've solidified the fact that you're staying up, when you get to, what is it, 41 or 43 points or something like
40 that. 40 is usually the gold standard, 40. But that is obviously, well, I guess it could end up being the case this year, but it's incredibly unlikely.
Yeah, but a bunch of these clubs, Watford, Everton, Swansea, West Brom, these guys have been safe for, you know, a little while.
Right, and they play for that too, which is what's disappointing. Imagine if you could, it would be neat to say, if you could just play in for that. I like play-in games. It's one of the things that makes the Bundesliga so cool, is they have 18 teams, 18 and 17 get relegated, and 16 plays the third place team in two Bundesliga. You know, you're either getting relegated.
Oh, right, yes. I remember
that is kind of a neat thing. Mm-hmm. Anytime you can add a play-in game, that's neat to me.
I also feel like the 16 team in Bundesliga has a huge advantage over the number three team in Bundesliga 2.
Right, for the most part. The idea is you may run up against a team that is still on the parachute payments from the year before.
Right, but that's true. And it would still be a match you'd want to watch, but I it would be interesting to look back and see the record of those games.
Yeah, what was it? There was something. This is not exciting banter at all. But there's
you're getting real deeply German now.
No, I really wanted to look up. There was something I wanted to look up today, and I knew it would make a great post. It was related to the Premier League, and it was, you know, a matter of the records against the best teams, and that's maybe the most impressive thing Leicester has going for them. I believe they lost to Liverpool, and they lost to Arsenal twice, but otherwise they've gotten a point from every team in the league, and they did get a point against Liverpool as well. Just a remarkable achievement that is so remarkable it's it's almost not. I know that sounds goofy, but you run out of things to say. We discussed this a little bit last week.
I know loyal podcast listeners will recall when we had the talks of Leicester in December and January, where they were going through that stretch where they were playing very good teams. And we're like, this is going to be...
This is where it happens.
Yeah, this is going to refine them if they can make it through this.
Well, right. I mean, you're giving us more credit because I just, at least in my case, I sat here saying, well, that's not going to happen. This is where the dream ends.
Well, no, but it was something that, I mean, it was still sort of a reality to us then, I think, that, you know, this is a surprise story that whether or not we rationally believe it's going to happen, we want it to happen, or we would like to see just something that wild. And I just think the story has lasted so long, that's just the reason why I've sort of been like, I'm not head over heels right now. Is you're a little bit more of an emotional fan than I am, I think, though.
I would not have been had the Spurs-Chelsea game not ended as wild as it did.
Yeah.
And if that game went down 0-0, Goose hitting, sitting on his hands, you know, Harry Kane just can't find a way to score.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm less excited about it. But I sat in the hallway here outside the studios and watched five red cards or yellow cards in the last 5 minutes. Mm-hmm.
While I was waiting for lights to change on Elmwood Avenue.
Yeah, that's a tough street to go down, man.
Yep. It was kind of like running into Moussa Dembele.
Well, he was physical today. So I just have a lot of questions that will be better served for this summer. once it all shakes out, what happens with Leicester?
I feel like the topics might change a bit this summer.
Oh, they're going to change a lot, man. The Copa America roster, which we'll discuss at some point today, there's a very interesting undercurrent, and in the lower tiers of American soccer now. We'll talk about MLS to Detroit a little bit later, and mostly because in so many instances you have to play a perfect game to keep the media on your side, to keep fans on your side as a supporters group, as a smaller team. Believe me, I feel that pressure a lot with when we talk about running FC Buffalo. Are we making the right moves? Are we saying it the right way? Are we abiding by what our fans really want? Because those are the people who are driving us. And up until, I guess today was the time that Detroit put out their statement, the Northern Guard. And we'll read the statement a little later, what we can. I think the word turd is used, but I don't know if
that's not so bad.
No, it's not. I thought they were playing, their supporters were coming close to playing a perfect game, and They may have taken a misstep today. Not a misstep.
Ooh.
Not a misstep in my mind.
That's
but
a teaser if I've ever heard a
yeah,
teaser.
Yeah, we're going to have to get to that. I don't mean a misstep in my mind. It's something I would have been comfortable saying. But you are fighting, I think, with a lot of fans here in America, a desire for MLS to be great. So when you tell them that MLS isn't great, they are willing to hear it, but it's going to be very hard to keep them on board.
Yeah.
Because this is their thing. This is their our number one league, and they want it to shine. So much going on in the news. I do want to share one note with you, Ben, about have you been following the second tier, the teams who are getting promoted?
I've been seeing a little bit about Burnley.
Burnley is up officially.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Burnley won today, leaving the final match of the season between Middlesbrough and Brighton.
Mm.
The winner goes up.
Wow.
Well, also a tie, I believe Middlesbrough is atop them, but the game is at Brighton, or it's the other way around.
Who has championship rights to televise that?
That's a terrific question.
Thank you.
The only thing I know is that it is not the National Broadcasting Company.
Oh, okay.
Championship table. It is extremely interesting that this much money rides on that, and it gives you the taste, because they do have a playoff down there, because if you finish in third, you play the sixth team, and the fourth play the fifth, and the that's how you determine the third team that goes up to the Premier League. Mm-hmm. So Middlesbrough has 88 points and a plus 32 goal differential. Brighton has 88 points and a plus 30 goal differential.
Wow.
So Brighton has to win to go up.
Mm-hmm.
If they lose, or the loser, whoever finishes in third, has to win four more games.
It's a gauntlet, yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Is it not two more games?
But it is believable. No, because it's two-legged, I think.
Oh, it's two-legged.
Oh, maybe it's
legs
not.
Legs are so dumb.
Maybe it's not. Maybe the first one is two legs and there's a championship. I think that's how it works.
Yeah, that's silly, though. I mean, it's not like these teams are far away.
And they've played each other twice this year.
Oh, yeah.
So
somebody wants more money, I think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the funny thing is, if there was ever a reason, and they play at Wembley, but if there was ever a reason to rest on the laurels of having a balanced schedule, it's that. You've played a 46-game season because the championship is so big.
Ugh.
I mean, that is a grinder. That is an absolute grinder. And I want to, as long as we're in this time of year where every day in soccer in Europe, there's something of merit being played for something.
Yeah.
I do want to give a shout-out to our new pair of new players, not new players, they've been announced on the show from England, who completed the double in their league, the Team Solent players. They won the Southampton Senior Cup a couple weeks back, and today FC Buffalo player Sam Biles was the man of the match in the League Cup final for Southern England as they moved on and won that too. They did the double. That's a fun term.
Who did they beat in this?
Who did they beat in this? That is a good question. I was following it today. I want to say it was like Salisbury or something.
Mm.
The stakes.
Like stakes. Yeah,
the stakes. No, it was, I don't know.
That's all right. No,
yeah. Yeah, we're way down a rabbit hole at that point.
Yeah, well, that's good for them that they'll have some momentum before they come over. And I think probably from a club perspective, you're excited to see them, you know, at least have something to have achieved and be able to finalize something where they're from just before they start a new chapter here.
Yeah, we love to see that. And, the same for, you know, college players. You want to have them to have a terrific spring season. I know last year when we had four UB players coming, they were coming off a tremendous spring season. Now, you can judge the results for yourself. But
Scott Doney's birthday today, by the way.
Oh, the big man.
The big man.
The big man's birthday. I was talking to Shaq Diarra the other day from UB alumni, and they played.
Is it related to Shaq Lawson?
No. Spelled differently, too.
Oh.
They played at they played the UB alumni, the men's alumni, and he was bringing it up to me. He said, "Yeah, we were up 1-0 at halftime. Alex Mihal scored a great goal," and he's telling. And Vuana Johnson was there too, former UB player and former FC Buffalo player, and like, "Oh yeah, what happened in the second half? Oh, they scored 5 goals, we lost 5-1." So, fitness it was the blame, whether you like that or not. I don't know how much I buy it.
I kind of think it was cool that UB tweeted out the 11.
That was really cool.
Of the alumni, because it was fun to read through and see names that, you know, that
Anthony Johnson.
Yeah, and Brian Knapp coming back. And I mean, it's a very always an uphill climb for those guys to play against in form college kids. But to score first and to at least lead for a half was pretty good. I saw Cicerone and Scales had good second halves. And
I'm not just saying this because he's on FC Buffalo, but statistically, Braden Scales had a heck of a spring.
Yeah.
He scored six or seven goals, and he played half of it at right back. Mm-hmm. That's ridiculous. But that's when you want guys to hit, is really before their junior year, and you want them to find that form moving forward. But in theory, this is where a guy who, and if you look at Scales, there always seems to be a player like this. I don't know who it is at Canisius, because Dermott does a good job of cycling his guys through there. The name that pops into my head, though, is Derek Mayer, who just all of a sudden his senior year, he's always been pretty good, but he just hits form, finds a lot of goals, et cetera. That's when it's supposed to happen, really, for a lot of guys, because you're 3 years older than a freshman.
Mitchell Lott, man. That's when it turned down for Mitchell Lott.
That was great. Well, I mean, we don't know if Dr. Battaglia put some sort of like superhuman heart in him, and maybe part of that happened. No,
Mitchell Lott is a UB basketball player, if anybody is confused by the reference. But
yeah, well, it caught me off guard too. I was in soccer mode, but then I remembered, yeah, heart surgery.
Yeah, but he was the premier example of a guy whose career just took off as a senior, and you went from a guy who was a role player, essentially
string bean, 6'10", you know,
yeah, all the way to the MAC player of the year. Man, that was quite the story.
UB basketball has been pretty exceptional. But this is a soccer show, Football Club of Buffalo show. We'll be back in a few moments. Lots to talk to. I do want to get into that MLS angle. I'd like to talk about the United States men's national team.
The 55 players they called in?
40 players to choose 23. 17 will be cut, and you can almost imagine who they are already. But we'll get to that in a minute here on WBNY. And welcome back. Nick Mendola here on the Football Club of Buffalo show, along with my esteemed co-host, Ben Sugimoto. Is it short for Benjamin?
It is short for Benjamin. Yeah.
I like to call him the Suge from soccer.buffalonews.com. Do you hate that nickname?
No, I don't hate it.
Never forget the Suge.
We were talking about nicknames last night. we had a coaches meeting and an owners meeting at a place that rhymes with Mamhurst. Schmitza and Schmalhaus.
Schmitza.
Yeah, well, I was just trying.
Delicious.
Yeah, delicious Schmitza.
Pizza fries there, though. The real deal.
Yeah, people seem to love that. I see the picture, and I always think, nah, I'm going to keep eating the pizza, but they are very popular.
The picture makes you want to keep eating the pizza?
No, I just love the pizza there.
Okay.
They're a doughy operation, which I like. No, that's important to me in a pizza. I like the thick crust. I like to jam that crust in blue cheese.
Oh, that's right.
I want to make sure I don't lose any of the blue cheese in that equation. Mm. So, I mean, you know how I feel about potatoes. So we should talk about food at least a little bit every week.
Oh, man, I could talk about food forever, Nick.
Yeah.
I mean, it's part of my job. Most of my job, even.
Benjamin Food Gimoda.
Benjamin the Suge Food.
That doesn't make any sense,
nope.
Derek.
Good effort, though.
The Food Suge?
Derek Kramer trying to go over for a second week.
I'm not trying to go over.
One of these days we'll get to the Mendoza line.
We will, and it's like 150. I've always argued that I would like to make, because the Mendoza line is famously 200, mm-hmm. 1-for-5 in Major League Baseball, and I always thought, I would not mind being the guy. Like, I could choke it down if I made Major League Baseball, but I just couldn't get above 150, so we had the Mendoza line and the Mendola line. But he'd have to be a slick fielder.
Oh, yeah.
I would need some credit.
You'd be a shortstop batting eighth.
I'd be a center fielder.
Oh, very well.
Yeah, I don't need those hotliners.
You want to talk about the MLS or the U.S. men's national team?
You tell me.
I would like to talk about the U.S. men's national team because I have some strong takes there.
Bring me the fire, Ben Sugimoto.
I wish I had a little bit more time to research this because I would like to see the players
didn't make it.
Well, yeah, you know, Jurgen Klinsmann's 10-player snub list I think would be interesting.
Yeah.
But there are just so many players on there. I was reading down the whole list, and I don't like many of them.
Yeah, it's
simple. And these guys have gotten so many chances, Nick, so many chances. And it's just like now they're shoo-ins that they'll get called in. And they haven't done anything to keep their spots, basically.
It's going to be interesting to see what Klinsmann learned from the almost disasters and the actual somewhat disaster, which we saw against Mexico months back. But he calls up a 40-man roster training camp for the Copa America Centenario. They'll cut that down to 23. And this is the thing I don't like. The cuts all come before the first training game. The first training game, I think, is the 22nd in Puerto Rico, the first time the United States will play in Puerto Rico. And it's a perfect chance to try out people because, to be fair to Puerto Rico, they won't be very good.
Well, you never know anymore.
Well, In some cases, you do. but at the same hand, or on the other hand, what you're going to see is they're going to have to cut down those players beforehand. And I believe it's 5 goalies, 8 forwards, and the midfielders and defenders aren't even necessarily midfielders and defenders. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so tell me what you're raging about. What's your hot takes?
It's the guys who you've mentioned in articles in the past that just keep getting called in. It's the Orozcos. And I know you have a soft spot for Castillo, but
I thought he played well in the last couple of games.
Ventura Alvarado is another one.
Right.
What did Kellen Acosta do in the U23 two legs against Colombia that made you even remotely excited?
Nothing. The only thing is he plays holding mid at FC Dallas.
Yeah.
So you're just going to keep trying to make him a average left back?
Exactly, or below average left back, honestly.
Right.
And as a holding mid, it's not like the U.S. didn't bring 13 of those other holding mids
sure.
into camp. I mean, I think you'd probably like to see Perry Kitchen get called in, which he did.
Right.
And it'll hopefully give him a fair chance to finally beat out Kyle Beckerman, or maybe Jermaine Jones. Is Jermaine Jones a 10 now, or is he still a 6?
Well, I'll tell you what. I think this is where we see the drop-off between domestic soccer here in the United States and the international level. Jermaine Jones is just overpowering center backs in MLS.
It's frightening.
Because he's just a freaky athlete. I mean, he's very good as well with a thunderous shot, but he's a freaky athlete. And you can't do that against...
other freaky athletes.
I mean, it'll be interesting to see when Colorado goes up against, and maybe, I think it was earlier this year, so it might not be till later in the year, but I think it's Yelly. I think you say Yelly Van Damme, who's a big Belgian center back for the Galaxy. That's what I want to see, how he measures up as a number 10. But, it is. Calls an Eric Lehigh, which I like.
Yeah.
Someone who only has played every week for Nottingham Forest for 5 years.
But that's still like a fringe guy. I don't see Lehigh being, all of a sudden, being Jurgen Klinsmann's answer at outside back. Same thing with Tim Ream. I see these guys as reserve caliber players that
sure,
are getting called up.
That's how bad the left back pool is, though.
I know,
both of those guys are considered left backs. Tim Ream is a center back or a right back. Eric Lehigh is primarily a right back, although he's played a lot of left back. And you've still got DeAndre Yedlin, who he's going to be the right back because he's playing right back now, in theory.
I have to ask you about Timmy Chandler and how you feel about him getting called back in.
He's not even playing for Frankfurt.
Wasn't it weird, though, that he's getting this chance now? It seemed strange to me when I saw his name on there. I was like, I have nostalgic good feelings about Timmy Chandler.
He's had good games.
But it's not within the last 2 years.
No. Very interesting with him. I wonder if, and it shouldn't be this way, but I wonder if Klinsmann doesn't feel a little bit of not buyer's remorse, but hey, I really pushed you to pick the United States as your country. Mm-hmm. But on the same hand, you're not seeing Geddy and Zelalem. You're not seeing Julian Green. You're not seeing some of these guys like Fafa Picot, who he mentioned in Twitter. But Christian Pulisic is there. And that's going to be interesting, listed as a midfielder.
And so is Wando. Do you think Jurgen Klinsmann has Chris Wondolowski's tweets like stickied so he gets some kind of an alert whenever, or maybe he just, whenever Wando scores a goal, he gets like flooded with text or something, because he always recognizes when he scores.
I'll tell you what. I think it's a very interesting conversation. Wando misses that arguable sitter, but very much a should-make shot against Belgium.
Yeah, if you're a striker, I feel like you should make that
right.
shot. Yeah. If you're a center back up there, maybe not. But
that
if you're a
said, production-wise... I think he's leading the league in goals for MLS right now.
Yeah, but he's always had good MLS seasons.
Right.
You know,
he's also, I mean, when he broke through for the U.S., which was, it was like a one-year window, it feels like, between the famous miss against Belgium and dating back to when he really started to break through. And he scored all the time for the U.S. I think he's got 10 goals. I would imagine his strike rate is close to 33%, which for the United States, that is almost off the charts.
He is a quadruple A player to me.
Oh, I totally agree. He is Jody Gage, a fantastic player at one level who just doesn't necessarily make the jump. I am wondering his stats, and this isn't even me backing him because he's an NPSL alum. He's going to be the all-time leading scorer in MLS history by the time it's all said and done, which is stunning because he didn't even break through at a young age. In 2005, he's 22 years old. And just getting 2 appearances for San Jose. By 2009, he's 26 and he has 4 MLS goals. Okay.
Yeah.
Since then, he has 110.
Yeah.
So, Yeah, that is something.
Does that say more about MLS?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
He's got 10 goals in 31 games, so I'm almost on point there.
Yeah.
I'm having a lot of struggles in adapting my feelings on MLS to where I am on the U.S. national team, because I watch Toronto FC as often as I can. And Bradley and Josie Altidore, Bradley, who's arguably the United States' most important player, they're frustrating to watch.
Bradley playing a holding role for Toronto, is
that
correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm watching a lot of these players come back to MLS, really with the exception of Jermaine Jones, and not consistently showing us what we were seeing beforehand. I'm just really frustrated by it. And I look over and I see Christian Pulisic scoring in two games at age 17 with Borussia Dortmund. And as much as you need experience, my thought is, well, he's got to play. If he's doing it at that level, he's got to play. Bobby Wood, subject of, the rumor is, a $4 million bid from Hamburg to go up to the Bundesliga. Aaron Johansson playing in the Bundesliga as a striker. There are players, Danny Williams in the second tier with England.
Reading, yeah.
I need some MLS players to look really good strictly MLS players to look really good in the United States uniform. I'm not talking, wow, Jermaine Jones looks pretty good, and he's just come back, right?
Why do you think Aaron Johansson didn't get called in? Is he still,
hurt? Yeah, him and Terrence Boyd. And Terrence Boyd will be up in the Bundesliga as well as Red Bull. Is it Leipzig or Leipzig? They'll be getting promoted.
Leipzig.
Yeah, they'll be getting promoted. And both of them have been fighting injuries, as has there's a third guy that I can't remember. And he's been fighting him forever. But in the European, I wrote on NBC Sports Pro Soccer Talk, I wrote something along the lines of, if the best U.S. team, it was after our conversation we had on the air, if would the best U.S.-based team shine against the best European-based team? And as time has gone on and the more I've thought about it, we are due for another fairly golden age of players in Europe. There was a time where there were, I think, three players on Rangers, and Brian McBride was around, and Clint Dempsey was shining for Fulham. We're due for another time like that, the same way that Mexico went through it towards the end of the last cycle. And it'll be interesting to see how that goes down.
It's funny. If you look through the 40 that Jurgen called in, I feel like the starting defenders would all come from Europe. The starting midfielders would all come from the U.S. And the forwards would really be the only area where there was some mixture between the two.
Mm-hmm.
If you're talking keepers, and this is another aside, I feel like keeper used to be a strength for the U.S. and is now... they have replacement level talent there.
It is on a borderline weakness. Mm-hmm. A borderline weakness. It's not, though, because I do believe Tim Howard, again, he's and he played this week, but he up until January was a 10-year starter on a Premier League team.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's very good. Guzan is, as much as I don't think he's a Premier League caliber goalkeeper,
yeah,
he's fine. He's a good backup to have for your national team.
Yeah, I agree.
The key to the United States is in, we've always seen, it almost seemed like which bald guy is going to fill in next, right? For a long period of time.
Yeah.
From Miola wasn't totally bald, but Miola to Keller, to Friedel, to Howard. And I am thinking that the U.S. has to hope that Tim Howard gets them through qualifying, and that they can sprinkle in Ethan Horvath. And that Ethan Horvath, in theory, if you want me to draw up how this works to the United States goalkeepers, I'd like him to be sold to a team on a traditional schedule. He's at Molde now in Norway. I'd love to see him sold to a team on a traditional European calendar and playing every week in and week out, because he could be the future. And he's 20. He'll be 24 next year. He'll be 26 at a World Cup. He could be a three-cycle World Cup goalkeeper.
Wow,
he could be.
You've got a lot of hope for Ethan Horvath.
I do. I think. He kept them. Granted, he was facing a firing line, and we saw Tim Howard do this against Belgium. He impressed because of how much pressure he was under.
Yeah, and I've said this on the show before that I would take Horvath over Cody Cropper any day of the week.
Yeah.
Cody Cropper brings a lot more fire, and I think communication, but I don't know how effective that is and how much of it's just freaking out at his defenders. Horvath seems a little bit more mild-mannered in net.
I do think goalkeepers in MLS will have the easiest path towards not to getting onto the national team without going overseas because you're facing crazy shots. I know that sounds nuts, but you're getting the action there. And it's funny, you would think the flip, right? You would think defenders would, or you would think forwards would have a better chance of breaking in for an MLS, but I wonder if Klinsmann and the technical staff don't look at it and think, yeah, but who's he scoring against? One of the things I'm loving pointing out, because you know I enjoy the pro Benny Feilhaber crowd, which is, and I like him as a player a lot, but they started off 3-0 and they're now 1-5 since he came back from injury.
Yikes.
And I would like to kind of track.
But all their backs got hurt, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'd like to track how they've done in the win-loss column since he started exploding offensively, because maybe he's just a guy who's feast or famine. And I loved him when he was on the U.S. team.
I think I'm pretty sure that Benny's issues extend more
personal
animosities, and there's been some stuff written about that. If you probably search Jurgen Klinsmann, Benny Feilhaber, you'll read quite a bit about it.
I'd rather dive into a fire, but I understand what you're saying. that pro crowd is very difficult to read. I think that'll be interesting. Staying in MLS, Ben, you doubtless, and I need to admit, obviously, as an owner in the National Premier Soccer League, and frankly, I'm close friends with the Detroit City Football Club owners. Hmm. MLS, famously this week, Don Garber shows up in Detroit with Dan Gilbert and I can't remember Gore's first name, the Pistons owner.
Tom
Gore's the Pistons owner and the Cavaliers owner, and they want to bring soccer, MLS soccer, to Detroit. And there have been some really interesting tweets, regardless of, before you get into the culture, somebody tweeted, we were not going to be able to pay our teachers after June, but yeah, let's bring in a soccer team. At the same time, there's been a very interesting backlash against MLS from Detroit City fans. They've just recently raised their cap on season ticket holders. They have over 2,500. I think they've opened up another 250 with a couple weeks ago before the season.
Yeah.
And obviously, they do their marketing. They would anticipate that they're going to sell those. They're going to have 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 fans a game this year in the fourth tier. And their fans kind of came out and said, We don't need MLS. This is, if you're not going to bring Detroit City with you,
right,
then we don't need that. And I think what's interesting is it is, in a way, setting the table for a lot of future discussions, because this is the first time we are seeing, even if it's minuscule, real traction coming from a supporters group.
Right.
In Atlanta, the Silverbacks fans have been basically criticized for, MLS is coming, cool, we're fans of them now.
Yeah.
And Chattanooga and Detroit kind of led the charge. Minnesota United, they might not be able to keep the Minnesota United name, but is it Dark Clouds? I think their fan group is called the Dark Clouds.
Is it really?
Yeah.
That's funny. I didn't know that.
Yeah, they were right on board at the MLS announcement. Detroit, there were no fans at that press conference, and that's the one thing where I disagree with the fans. I don't think there needed to be. This was a discussion. It wasn't even streamed. But at the same time, they have made an indelible imprint on the way we view that tier of soccer. I mean, Chattanooga as well, with the 18,000 people at the championship game. But Detroit was putting out fan videos 2 years ago of 3,000 people in the crowd. And honestly, I don't think, I know MLS has always wanted to have their footprint there, and it's a natural rival for Toronto FC, and it's a midpoint between Columbus and Toronto as well. Mm. They've always wanted a team there. I'm going to think the investors started noticing because of Detroit City FC. So the question becomes, what, if anything, are they due? I mean, that's a real question.
And I'm going to turn the question around to you.
Please.
As an NPSL team co-owner, and Detroit City has a lot of cooks in the kitchen between Alex Wright, Dave Dwyer, Todd Krop, Sean Mann, Ben Steffens.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in the situation where you have a supporters group wanting one thing, and then we don't know what's happening between the two very rich men and DCFC ownership, how are you tiptoeing along this situation? And I think, this is my perspective, I'll let you think about your answer a little bit, but I think they've been smart to choose their words and probably speak less than maybe
the
they might
or the
want
supporters?
To. The owners.
Oh yeah, okay.
Yeah. Oh, because the supporters are definitely
they're on fire. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it must be tough in a situation where you see your supporters, you know, really going haywire, but you have to really control the message if you're the ownership because you don't want to make them even angrier.
Can you rephrase the question a little bit? Because I want to answer it in the way you wanted to.
Well, it was a pretty convoluted question.
Okay, fair enough.
And I kind of wanted to leave it open-ended because you probably know more about the specifics of what's happening here. And on the outside, I just see owners who are unsure of the future, but somehow in discussions with these two very wealthy owners, Gores and Gilbert, and then a supporters group that sort of feels a little bit left in the dark, but not really sure, and maybe coming to their own conclusions.
Yeah, I think there's part of that. When I look at Detroit, and when Garber said at the earliest 2020, my thought was, here is an opportunity for Detroit to end up basically shackling Don Garber to DCFC, because they're already at, I mean, it'll be interesting to see. We'll be there on June 3rd for one of their first night games. Yep. They're going to, thousands of people there. And they've got now four seasons before 2020 even gets here. Yep. If they're getting standing room only 11, 12,000 people still in the fourth tier, mm-hmm. I mean, that is just bonkers. Now, how about this? If you're Bill Peterson with the NASL, are you not looking at investors who might want to put a stadium in Detroit and take Detroit there and get there first? It is a fascinating soccer climate right now.
And there's a lot of players and teams to go around. If you just look at that whole other conference in the NPSL, it's basically all Michigan teams.
Oh, yeah. There is so, and so many fans, too, that could fall under that umbrella.
Yep.
Because you can be. I mean, you see it all the time. I mean, we have at FC Buffalo, you know, we have season ticket holders who are also big-time Philadelphia Union fans, Toronto FC fans, Portland Timbers fans. We also, of course, have that English contingent as well and European contingent. But it's surprising to me that we've seen, or not surprising, it's been enlightening for me to see American fans who support MLS teams also supporting the team in their backyard, mm-hmm. which is, you know, a question. But the investor side of it is incredibly interesting to me, because if you're, think of any big name out there, if you're, let's say Buffalo, if you're Terry Pegula, you know, because there's not a big team here, a bigger team than us, I should say, but I'm just being fair, there's not an MLS team here. If you're, geez, think of another market that doesn't have a team, and you're the main investor, like Arthur Blank was in Atlanta. Are you not monitoring this to see how they deal with their community? It's, I don't know. I there's so many questions, Ben.
And that's what the supporters are really concerned about, right? Is,
sure.
Is quote-unquote overturning what they and the owners have done for so long to grassroots build this, and then to have it swept away from them by somebody who has a lot of money seems very unfair to them.
Yeah, validation should be, even if it's somewhat insincere, they have to get some love out of this. I mean, it's just shocking. Now, if on one hand you're looking at Detroit as a market and thinking everybody knows about Detroit City, I'm going to co-opt them, I'm going to buy them out, and they're not going to have anything to do about it. But as time goes on, you're thinking about 2020. Uh-huh. You are leaving a lot of wiggle room. I think Don Garber is in a really tricky spot right now, because he wants to have a bigger league. He knows he has to cap it at some point.
Yep.
He wants to bring stars to this league, Ben, and sprinkle them all over the country. But how would you like it? And we see this in the NFL right now, and they haven't necessarily navigated it really well. You might only see Aaron Rodgers in your town. If a quarterback has an 8-year career, you might see him twice mm-hmm. in your town, because you're going to play the divisions on that kind of oscillating pattern. Pick a player. Lionel Messi spends the twilight of his career in Sacramento, right? In the Republic, they have an MLS team, and there's 32 teams or 28 teams in MLS. You're not going to see some of those stars in your town. Oh, and if that guy's in the league for only 1 or 2 years, it's not an easy job.
No, but you're bound to see somebody. And the Stars are really proliferating a lot now. Like, the MLS is still a place where you go when you're a 33-year-old former English Star. And it's to the point where, you know, 75% of clubs have a marketable name, you know.
Right.
And maybe it's not quite that high, but there's still a lot of Pirlo, Gerard, Lampard.
I think it
David
is.
David Villa.
Yeah. I mean, Tim Howard in Colorado.
Yep. Jermaine Jones in Colorado.
Right. I mean, if you bring up the list, I mean, but I don't know, like, if Wando counts as
right.
a, but
I'm thinking Earthquakes.
But he's a legend in San Jose.
Yeah.
Gerard and everybody on the Galaxy. Yeah. Clint Dempsey on the Sounders.
Yeah.
Michael Bradley on Toronto. Didier Drogba in Montreal.
The Timbers don't really have that guy, which is interesting.
No, but they've also built that kind of triangle midfield themselves, you know, with Nagby. They've, to their credit, produced those players that have taken the next step. And Diego Valeri didn't have the benefit of really going overseas. I think he went directly from Argentina to the United States, and he's fantastic.
Right,
he's a very good player. So I don't know. I think that it's a tricky thing to talk about. But if I were Detroit City's fans, I would 100% understand the anxiety and the sensitivity to what's going on. And if I were Detroit's owners, to get back to your original question, I think they have a very tricky game to play because they're responsible for their supporters. And I don't mean that in responsible for how their supporters act, the best interest of their supporters.
Yeah.
And if they look at the long-term vision and MLS is coming and they have a chance to get on board there, and they realize through marketing, through research, through analysis, that their growth would be limited at some point, what decision do they make? Because, and I've thought about this with FC Buffalo. Let's say we believe that none of our hardcore fans are going to leave, and we can continue to run the league but not make a ton of money, but get by every year. Is that worth it? And the question is probably.
Yeah.
If you enjoy it, it's worth it. So Detroit City fans make a terrific point. We, this group, this loud, noisy group, we won't go to MLS as long as Detroit City's still here.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it tricky for Detroit City, and in a good way. It's a great problem to have.
And one thing I think that bodes in Detroit City's favor is that the owners are smart.
I really like
Alex
job.
Wright a lot. We've only had, we probably talked to him three or four times in my life. Donovan Powell, who has, you know, some
the GM,
the GM. He is very thoughtful, it seems, and has a very good understanding of the landscape in which he's working. So I feel like there are smart people involved, and I think they know that the reason why Detroit City's name is where it is right now is because of the supporters.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, the ownership did a very good job building that supporters.
Yeah, I want to be careful what verb I use, but they've kind of curated it. You know, they've made sure that the freedom was there. But, you know, they've been, I don't know the roots of whether they decided that the fans would be the ones who are maybe a little more vulgar would be on the other side of the field traditionally from the more family friendly. And I know DCFC fans really hate when you use that term, but they're the way it's been set
up.
You
just got 10 mean tweets, Nick. Check
your
phone.
No. Look, I made a post and I stand by this 100%. I hope it kind of sums up my opinion on it. It would be, it'd be a travesty for any MLS team or MLS group to come into a town as established as that. And I think there are probably, Detroit is the top of the pops along with Chattanooga. Tulsa does a good job too, but Tulsa's had to see that too. They've seen two teams come into their neighborhood. There are probably 15 groups, and I'd like to hope that we could get there one day, that if the fans, if an MLS group came in and didn't work with them, that it's just kind of sad, and it just goes to the business of sports, and it would hurt soccer for me.
Yeah.
It would hurt supporting American soccer. Because if it becomes that American soccer, instead of being a grassroots thing that grows and grows and grows, if it just becomes the monolith comes in, or the monopoly comes in and drops a team in your town, then I won't ever have a connection with a team. And that stinks, you know? I'll just watch Newcastle. Because if there's a team in my backyard, let's say it was Syracuse or Pittsburgh or whatever was closest, and they act kind of above it, and they have a limit on how their supporters act, and they don't work with the groups that were there before them, it's just the same as supporting a team that I can't go to the games every week.
And it's very much the simplicity of the experience to supporting a like a fourth division club. You know,
you're only,
you're spending between $5 and $10 a ticket, you know, across the whole NPSL. It's a very, you feel like you're part of something small that's growing, and that's something
there
that's,
is. There's a punk
something
rock
that's
feel.
Ripped away from you when anything bigger comes in.
And Ben, you know, I would not be doing this, and arguably, and maybe I wouldn't have gotten into soccer media, but I would not be doing FC Buffalo if I wasn't a season ticket holder for Queen City FC.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that I thought they were doing it perfect, but it's that they were doing it. Mm-hmm. And these other markets that were doing it and growing it, to think that they could lose out just because someone with, you know, it's like almost like someone's patenting your product.
Yeah.
That's depressing. I mean, it's genuinely depressing. Whether you like, I mean, you might not like the way that Detroit City's fans act. I know in our league, there's a lot of people who don't like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about fans, not owners or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But you cannot deny that they've built a business.
And those fans have so much ardor. I don't even really know what the best word to describe those fans' passions for that club.
Yeah.
But it's almost kind of scary how rabid that fan base is.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and this is coming from somebody who's grown up in Bills country, you know, where there are people launching themselves onto tables in the middle of Orchard Park.
Well, I kind of...
The tables have no comment.
I didn't ask the tables, Derek.
I like that Detroit kind of has seemingly avoided that part of it, too. Like, they may be loud, and they might be swearing. And not they might be. They are loud.
And they are
they
swearing.
They are swearing.
And there are smoke bombs.
And there are some literally, I'm going to go ahead and say, offensive things being thrown mm-hmm. out there. But they're not firebombing people. By the way, we will do a show. And this will, if there are people from Detroit listening, they're going to be upset. I will never understand smoke bombs. Visually, maybe it works.
Oh,
for
visually,
you?
It's one of the best pictures I have ever taken on a cell phone. Was when I went to Detroit City in 2013.
Yeah,
where it was before the FC Buffalo. It was before the Detroit and what was it Erie final.
Yeah,
and just the smoke bombs and just the cloud that was coming up from the fans as they were entering the stadium
was really cool. Look, I get that, but also
it was a high school stadium.
I've missed at least 11 minutes of FC Buffalo games in Detroit. Because I can't see what's going on the field.
Mm.
But
that's fair. At least they have a new field, too.
I can't wait.
Instead of playing in crevice-filled Castec.
Crevasse.
Crevasse.
We got to go. Fun week. We're going to get back to guests next week. It'll be the first day of FC Buffalo training next Monday.
Wow.
So maybe we'll try and bring a player in with us, and then we'll have our games on the old WBNY. We're very excited about that. We have to we'll try and get some details out there about the broadcast crew in the coming weeks, and go from there. So for Ben Tsujimoto, I'm Nick Mandola. Thanks for hanging out. We got to go. Bye.